Good morning, everyone. I have a feeling people are not too excited about listening about worms first thing in the morning, but here we are. So I will take you through a few things about both Evidence Action, which is the organization for which I work and of which Deworm the World is a part of, talk a little bit about how we approach development from evidence to scale up and the problem of worms and what we're doing about it. And as Peter mentioned, to talk a bit about the recent worm wars, as they've been called on social media. So first things first, Evidence Action is an organization that's about 2 years old. We're relatively new, but actually grew out of a movement, which many of you probably know about in the international development field, around using randomized control trials to evaluate development interventions and try and figure out what works. Now, Evidence Action was created in effect because there is a gap between what researchers believe is effective in development and what is implemented on the ground. And so we were created to fill that gap. And Deworm the World is one of the programs that is based on a solid foundation of evidence, but really needs a lot of work to be able to take that evidence and bring it to scale and impact millions of people. So here's the core principles of Evidence Action. We only consider interventions whose efficacy is backed by substantial rigorous evidence. And I'll talk a bit about that from the perspective of deworming specifically in a bit. We target cost-effective interventions that improve the lives of millions. And at this point in deworming, we are reaching over 100 million children a year. We identify innovative, appropriate financing mechanisms, and that's not specific to deworming. On our Dispensers for Safe Water program, we work with a carbon market to obtain carbon financing for that program. And we build robust operational models. So that's sort of the tenets of what we do, but really we are also committed to self-evaluation, learning, and improving models for scaling over time. So a little bit about why evidence. This might be an obvious thing for this audience, but this goes back a little bit to some of the things we heard about yesterday, just on government spending. This is a graph about foreign government aid and the billions of dollars. I don't know how easy it is for you to see, $18.7 billion in 2013 that is flowing to less developed countries. And our perspective from Evidence Action is that we should strive as a field to increase our understanding of what works, to move the field to invest money more wisely, and into interventions that have a demonstrable impact on people's lives. Right now, very little of the billions of dollars spent on aid are based on rigorously evaluated data. So there's a lot at stake here. So at this point in time, there are now hundreds of impact evaluations that have been done on various development interventions. And that's in part in response to needing more accountability and transparency in the NGO sector and in the aid sector. But fundamentally for us, this is about increasing our understanding of the processes that underlie the persistence of poverty and the pathways out of it. So we need better data, an evidence base that has been rigorously evaluated, and randomized control trials are one but not the only way to do that. Those give us data. We want to understand the underlying causal relationships and their impact on people and communities. And then we want to take those, as I said before, and scale them up to reach millions of people. So many NGOs historically have started a program and then tried to evaluate it and figure out whether it works. We have taken that and flipped it on its head a bit, using RCTs have allowed us to take that conventional wisdom and instead, rather than starting with a perception of what works and then building a program around it, we take the research that others have done and use it as a foundation for designing programs to implement proven interventions. So Deworm the World is a case in point. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, Evidence Action is a bit different in that, as I said before, we do focus on scale. And scaling up means taking successful projects or programs and expanding and adapting them in different ways and across different contexts. So we believe that this is mission critical, but it's also understudied. But scale, one of the points that I do want to make is that scale does not happen organically. It's very deliberate, it's very strategic, and I think in many ways it's evidenced by the paucity of development programs that are actually operating at true scale. And so you hear a lot about programs that work, but are they really impacting the number of people who need them? And so in doing that and in thinking about scale, and like I said, we don't just do deworming, but we have other programs as well. We ask ourselves questions like, what are the essential ingredients to ensure program impact? How do we right-size program monitoring and evaluation? What is the best model to use? Is it partnering with other NGOs who might have complementary skills or existing relationships in countries? Is it a social franchise model, which is something that we've been thinking about on the dispenser side? Is it working with governments, which is what we do for the deworming program? And then how do we finance programs? How do we sustain them? How do we scale them over time? And how do we encourage donors specifically to make long-term commitments, which is really a lot of what's needed for a lot of these interventions. So let me talk a little bit about Deworm the World specifically. Our mission is to reduce the burden of parasitic worms in children by helping to launch, strengthen, and sustain national government-led school-based deworming programs. And so we do that through both impact on the policy environment, but also by providing tailored technical support for individual country programs. So, worms. 876 million children globally are at risk for parasitic worm infection. These worms are endemic in places with poor sanitation and hygiene conditions. And there's a range of impacts of worms on kids, but primarily they cause anemia and malnutrition, and they make children too sick and too tired often to go to school. And so there's data from a range of places, and I'll talk a bit about the evidence, but there's some historical data that says that children persistently infected with worms are likely to be 13% less likely to be literate and earned 43% less as adults. That was actually a study that was done in the American South when hookworm was still endemic in the early 20th century. And so here's just a little bit more about the endemicity patterns of worms and why school-aged children in particular are of particular concern. And so these are the three kind of worms that we call soil-transmitted helminths. Those are the main worms for which Deworm the World treats. And so you can see that these are peaking around the 8 to 10-year-old mark, which is quite logical when you think about kids at school and how they play and how they interact with one another, that worms that are transmitted through soil would be a particular problem. That's not to say that they're not a problem in other populations. Preschoolers are also very susceptible, and so in many cases, the programs that we support are also treating preschool-age children as well. So a little bit about the evidence, particularly on education. So there was a randomized control trial that was done in Kenya in the early 2000s that found that deworming reduced school absenteeism by 25%. And that was through impacting not only the kids who received deworming medication directly, but also those children who didn't receive it, but were impacted because the overall infection rate was lowered in the population. That same follow-up on that same study found that there was improved cognition in children who were too young to receive deworming tablets. So the drugs that we use to treat children are contraindicated for children that are under 1 year old. And so they looked at kids who were very young at the time of the deworming this deworming program that happened in Kenya, and saw that they had really improved cognition, even though they had never received a deworming pill at that point in time. And then subsequent to this RCT in Kenya, they followed up 10 years later found the same children who are now adults and looked at what they were doing in their lives, their health outcomes, their education outcomes, and found that over 20% higher earnings among wage earners and 12% more hours worked in young adults who were dewormed as children. So these are the same cohort that they, both of the treatment and control groups that they went back and looked at. And so what we find here is that deworming is important for education and not just health. And the reason why that's important, obviously not just beyond the benefits, is that it is a way to bring in a whole other cohort of groups that, and the education sector, that gives the education sector a reason to care and to get involved. And so this is why school-based deworming is important. School-based deworming is universally recognized as safe, simple, and cost-effective, both with education and health outcomes. 60%, it's cutting off a bit, but 60% of affected children globally are not treated. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Worm Wars just to get that out of the way before I go more into what we do at Deworm the World. So the economists, so many of you may have seen some of the debate. There was a lot in media and social media in particular. And this was due to two particularly well-timed, actually, studies that came out. One is a replication of the original research in Kenya that I just spoke about. And the other is the Cochrane collaboration review. And both the... Both of those were interpreted in some ways as, and have stated that deworming might not be as effective as some have made it, including us, have made it out to be. The Economist just this week had some views of their own, and you know, we often talk about making a mountain out of a molehill. The quote from The Economist was making a molehill out of a mountain, meaning we've got all of this evidence and some people have come along and started criticizing some particular points which really have been given outsize, I think, import in the media. This debate at its core, I think, is sort of wonky. It's around analytical methodologies and pits, to a certain extent, epidemiologists and economists against one another. Replicators of this original RCT that showed impacts of deworming on education, which is known as Miguel and Kramer, this study in Kenya, when they replicated it using the same data, they found the same effects as the original study. Then they made some interesting analytical choices, shall we say, that led them to another conclusion. So these choices, and I'm not going to go into detail about what they are. If you would like more information about this, you can read the blog on the GiveWell blog, Giving What We Can, posted some things on this. There have been a number of analyses by economists and others over the past month or so about this. But these choices that they made, these analytical choices, have been pretty heavily criticized. And so many of the trusted voices in the field have come out and said that they don't find that this new evidence, if we should call it that, this new information that's come to light should change in any way people's understanding of what the impact of deworming actually is. The other thing to say is this Cochrane review omits some evidence that we think is really important, and the methodology that's employed there is one that's really designed more for clinical applications and not for public health interventions specifically. Bottom line, no one disagrees that children should be treated for worms. That's never been in doubt. The fact is that deworming drugs are very effective. They're cheap. In most cases, they don't cost anything because they're donated by pharmaceutical companies, and they're very safe, even for those who are uninfected. What's at issue is whether you do mass deworming, which is you go in and you treat everybody in the population or all children in the population in this instance, or you test and then you treat individual diagnosis. The fact is that individual diagnosis is, on by most counts, about 4 times more expensive than mass treatment. And so it's really from the feasibility, both from a financing perspective and from the fact that then you need to actually have the health infrastructure to do that in many of these places, means that it's not going to be possible. And so many children who would need treatment wouldn't receive it in a situation where you were not doing mass treatment. So this is why the school-based approach provides an important solution, because what you're doing, in effect, is you're treating all children and you're going to schools, which is where kids already are, and you're treating them there. So it's both effective and it's cost-effective because it's leveraging existing infrastructure. I'll talk about that more in a minute. So what does Worm Wars mean for us at Evidence Action? In terms of the policies and the programs we support, no change. We continue to believe that deworming is good public policy. I think what it does point out is that more rigorous research is needed. And certainly as coming out of a research background as we do at Evidence Action and being very evidence-based in our approach, we always think that more research is important. The fact is it's really hard to do RCTs on deworming. You can't withhold, it's not ethical to withhold deworming treatment from populations because we know that it works. So it's a much more complicated problem to try and do more studies in the way that many people would like to see them. So just to point out a little bit from our work specifically in Kenya, this is to give you a sense of what's happening to worm prevalence in Kenya over time. And pre and post means that what they've done is they've gone to the populations before and after deworming happens and looked at the infection rates. And so you can see that there's been substantial declines in prevalence over time. So school-based deworming is, in many ways, it's an operational solution. It leverages the reach of education systems in many of the countries in where we work and those in which we don't, other countries that are endemic for parasitic worms. The reach of schools is much greater than that of health clinics, and there are more teachers than there are health workers. It's also very cheap. Because you're already paying teacher salaries, you already have the schools there. As I said, drugs are, in most cases, at least for school-aged children, donated by the pharmaceutical companies. It's very cheap to do this. So we have a solution. Its efficacy has been demonstrated, and it's low cost. How do you go from here to ensuring that large numbers of kids are dewormed? That's where we come in. So some of the things that we do, and we've got teams right now in Kenya and in India, and we're also working in Vietnam and Ethiopia. We provide policy advice and technical expertise to governments of highly endemic countries. These programs cannot operate without governments, and so a really important part of what we do is convincing them that this is good public policy. In many cases, it's actually not that hard. Governments have been increasingly looking at evidence-based approaches to development. In many cases, governments are actually contributing their own funds to these programs as well, although not in all cases. It's very context dependent. We work through government systems to scale programs quickly and efficiently using the existing infrastructure, as I said before. And although I did mention teachers, it does not mean that the health system is excluded. In fact, we rely quite heavily on existing health infrastructure and health workers to support teachers in the work that they do in treating children. And we plan for program sustainability. That includes financing, human resources, technical know-how, and a policy environment that continues to support deworming. And that's because you can't just treat kids once and then leave. You have to treat them consistently over years because worms come back very quickly. And so all of the work that we do in terms of treatment strategies and determining what the right frequency is and that sort of thing is based on guidance from the World Health Organization, with whom we work quite closely. Some of the factors that are critical to our success are a really deep understanding of policy and political environments. As I said, we've got teams on the ground that work very closely with governments in these countries to make sure that we're moving in the right direction on those fronts. We have credible partnerships with funders, other NGOs, research organizations, and multilaterals, including the WHO, as I just mentioned. And that allows us to not only do our work, but also in many cases support the costs of implementation for countries that cannot afford to pay for deworming programs themselves. We have deep technical expertise, but we also have a willingness to change and adapt our approach as circumstances require. And so in each country that we work in, we do things a bit differently depending on what the prevailing norms are there, while still maintaining high quality programs and a cost-effective approach. And in some cases, we integrate selectively where it furthers the goal of scaling up deworming. There's a lot of talk in this sector in particular about integration with water sanitation and hygiene, which is WASH for short. And so in some cases, that makes sense. There's actually not a lot of research around which WASH interventions actually work to prevent worm infection. And so we, as Evidence Action, cannot fully support programs for which there isn't sufficient evidence. But that doesn't mean that we can't partner with organizations that take other approaches to try and leverage those relationships to expand deworming to treat millions of kids. So during the 2014-2015 school year, and that's typically how we demarcate because it makes more sense than the calendar year, we supported the deworming of 98.3 million children across Kenya, Ethiopia, and India. And the majority of that was in India. I'll show you a breakdown in a minute of that. The Ethiopia program is very new. That is not yet scaled to the entire country. By the time that program is scaled, it will be treating over 10 million children annually. In Kenya, we're currently treating all at-risk children. And in India, 89 million is only the tip of the iceberg to a certain extent. So, so 89.9 million children were treated on India's first National Deworming Day that was held on February 10th this year. And we were supporting the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, the government of India. This was a policy priority for the Modi government. When they came in, they wanted some quick wins on the health side, and deworming is the perfect quick win. So these are the states in dark pink are the ones where we also work at the state level very closely with state governments. In many of these states, we've been working for a number of years already. The light pink are other states that also dewormed in February, but where we're not working specifically with state governments. And so really this was, you know, pretty incredible to see about 90 million children being treated on one day. Well, actually 2 days. You've got deworming day, and then you've got mop-up day, which is when they go back and make sure that all the kids who are absent on the first day get treated on the second day. But it speaks in large part to just the huge population in India. 240 million children in India are at risk of worm infection. So I think understanding how government structures work and how to influence policy in a variety of different ways and provide technical guidance, which is in many respects really what the government in India needed to be able to scale up their program in this way, was important for the success of that. So a little bit about cost. I won't go through this in detail, but I did want to point out that deworming is very cheap. We typically use a figure that says under 50 cents a kid for deworming. That is, in many cases, a huge overestimate. It entirely depends on the scale at which you're operating. So you can see here, we don't have the figures yet for the National Deworming Day, and that's going to be quite tricky because of all of the different factors that went into that. But these are for the prior year, and you can see that Bihar, Rajasthan, and Delhi are three states in which we work and have been working for a number of years in India. You can see that the total cost per child in Bihar, where over 16 million children were treated, in Rajasthan, where it was almost 11, 9 and 10 cents per child there. In Kenya, it's more expensive in large part because it's also endemic for schistosomiasis, which was mentioned yesterday. There's another organization with whom we work closely, actually, in Ethiopia, the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, also recommended by GiveWell and Giving What We Can. And they primarily treat for schisto. We treat for schisto in places where it is also endemic. So luckily, India does not have that problem, but Kenya does. So it's often much more expensive to treat because the drugs are more expensive and you need more of them. And so I just put up here the sort of things that are included, but pretty much what we don't count are government costs that are already being incurred because you're already paying teacher salaries, you've already got school infrastructure, all of that, so we don't include that. We do include the value of drugs, whether or not they are donated or if they're procured by governments or others. And we also include the costs of prevalence surveys, which are how we figure out who has worms and what treatment is needed, and then we measure impact over time by going back to those same places and seeing what's happened. I don't think I have too much time to talk about monitoring and evaluation, but one of the things I did want to point out is that we do spend a lot of our time thinking about how to evaluate the effectiveness of our programs and actually doing it. And so we have a number of different ways in which we look at that. And primarily that is to assess whether or not the programs are doing what they say that they are, which is treating children. Coverage reporting, particularly in neglected tropical disease programs, of which parasitic worms are considered a neglected tropical disease, are historically quite unreliable. And so we try our very best to figure out whether or not the numbers that are being reported, and all that data is actually collected by teachers and principals and then flows up a chain through the various administrative levels of government. We work very hard to try and understand whether or not that data is accurate. Now, we can't. When you're treating in Bihar, you know, there are 67,000 schools that treat on one day. We cannot go to many of those schools to figure that out. So we do a very small representative sampling, and we look for trends in the data and try to figure that out. And then we also send out monitors that are, we call them independent monitors. They're hired by us. They are not government personnel to go out and actually go to schools in advance. Are schools prepared? Are the drugs in store waiting? Have teachers been trained? Are there posters hanging up to tell kids to come to school on that day, et cetera, and try and understand whether the processes that we have been advocating for with the government are actually taking place. One point I wanted to make is about some of the operational research that we also work on. And one of the tough questions around deworming that governments often ask us is, how long do we need to do this for? And the answer right now is that nobody really knows. Parasitic worms are, as I mentioned, endemic in places that are that have poor sanitation conditions. And so without dramatic improvements in sanitation, there isn't really a great answer to that. And so one of the things that we've been doing is piggybacking on the program that we support in Kenya to try and help understand whether or not it's possible to actually break transmission of worms by drug administration alone. And so we're working very closely with the London School of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene, who's actually leading on this study, to test epidemiological models for reaching that breakpoint. And they're planning to replicate that over a variety of settings. But pretty much what they're doing is also treating adults and trying to find out whether or not you can actually get transmission low enough that the worms can no longer reproduce, and so you don't have to treat them anymore, which could be potentially cost-saving. However, it's very expensive to treat all people in a population because you've got to go door-to-door. You've got to employ community health workers and volunteers, and so it's not necessarily very scalable. So one of the things that we are doing is a study called ADCOS, which is to look at cost-effective, operationally feasible approaches to treating adults and to try and understand whether or not that will be, whether or not there's a more cost-effective way to do that, that we can contribute to that discussion. So what's next for us at Deworm the World Initiative? One is to try and bend the curve, shall we say, through aggressive scale-up in additional countries. So we're scoping a number of countries right now to potentially work in. And so that involves both talking to governments, talking to partner organizations, and understanding whether or not our services could be of use. Increasing the number of partners who can support large-scale programs. So that's not only doing it ourselves, but helping other organizations to provide the type of technical support and advice that we do. And that allows us to, in many ways, have a greater impact while maintaining a small footprint. Leveraging existing programs for operational research. So the Kenya program and the research I just mentioned is one of those ways. Another way is to try and understand how to reach non-enrolled kids, which is always a problem, kids that aren't in school. They are targeted by these programs, but the coverage is historically quite low. And then also growing the donor base to help fill the funding gap. There's a lot more work that's needed in a lot of countries to make sure that all children are treated for worms that need it. And so we are working with our current donors, but also with the larger global community to try and understand whether we can find other donors that are interested in supporting this work. Thank you very much.